Welcome, everyone. This is February 25th, 2006. It's the LaRouche Show. I will be the host today. My name is Marcia Mary Baker. As you know, the LaRouche Show is weekly, and many of you are listening by telephone live, but it's on the internet from 3 to 4 in the afternoon from the United States Eastern Time, from the Executive Intelligence Review News Service, which is on www.larouchepub.com, LaRouchePub.com. And I welcome you all here today. And those of you who have seen the notice in advance of who would be, what we would be talking about and who would be here, know that we also expected to have Harley Schlanger, Lyndon LaRouche's Western States representative. And indeed, he is near our studio, but he's in Washington, D.C., visiting his Eastern States friends. And so we won't have the pleasure of him in the studio today, but he will be doing the show March 4th. So keep that in mind. And I will introduce our other guests after pointing out that the focus today, our topic, we called this, the quality of leadership to save the nation. And we said that because just a couple days ago in Washington, D.C. on February 23rd, Lyndon LaRouche gave an international webcast fielding questions, especially from Washington, D.C., from people in and around the institutions of the United States, and also receiving questions from around the country and around the world, and meeting privately, too, the same day with many constituency leaders of our country, state officials, labor leaders, medics, others. And so much came out of that session. I recommend everyone look to see this. Both there's a transcript and you can see the archive of the video. It's on LaRouche PAC, the LaRouche Political Action Committee, which is www.larouchepac.com. That's LaRouchePAC.com. And to discuss this, there are a couple people in Washington, D.C. who were there and have been on a week of action. So we welcome Jerry Duran. Hi, Jerry. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Marcia. Hello.
And with you, I know you have Saba Pulela, right?
Yes, hello.
Hi. And these gentlemen are taking time out of their busy schedule for, as I say, the week of action, but they're speaking to us. Where are you, Saba? In the Washington, D.C. office of the LaRouche Youth Movement, or where?
Yeah, our new office that we just moved to.
So we want to... Go ahead.
Near the convention center.
Okay, near the action. And from the West Coast in Los Angeles, we welcome Aaron Sardina. Hi.
Hello. Good to be here.
And you have a LaRouche Youth Movement special cadre school coming up, or will be doing so at some time, Aaron?
Yeah, coming up right around, in about 2 months, right around the time of...
Oh, we had some disconnection there. So we'll get back to Aaron. So let me take this moment then while Aaron's reconnecting just to tell you some of the things that Mr. LaRouche has been up to just in the last few hours. Literally about 3 hours ago, he phoned in to say he has finished and signed off on a whole platform for this 2006 critical year, for a policy platform in the tradition of FDR and Benjamin Franklin. Part of it has been made known to us as a prolegomena to the Democratic Party platform that we should be having. That is going to be rushed into print in the Executive Intelligence Review that will be dated March 3rd. So watch this space, as they say, for that being made available. And the second thing is, over the next 24 hours, maybe the next 12 hours, there's going to be a special press release put up on the relevant websites that Mr. LaRouche commissioned about something he highlighted at his webcast on February 23rd in terms of where we stand regarding a potential global monetary and financial meltdown, because we're at such an extreme case of instability, of various kinds of bubbles, of derivatives and debt and intercontingencies of hedge funds, that some of you may know on February 22nd in the nation of Iceland, which, in case you haven't been following this, has become home base for a wild Reykjavik stock market-based bubble. There was a meltdown of the Icelandic currency. It dropped 9%, the Icelandic krona, in one day. There was a meltdown on its Reykjavik stock market. And what is this about? LaRouche just said, who knows what this might trigger. It may trigger nothing. It may trigger a lot. But we can get into this more, what happened on Wednesday. But what's happened today is there are signal pieces appearing in various financial press around the world. I'll mention one, the London Telegraph, which has an article that goes by the name of something like Oceanic Meltdown Set to Occur. That's not exactly what it is, but you get the idea, saying that in fact it's the big time speculation that's called the carry trade, that was based on the Japanese having a very low interest rate, where speculators could go in and borrow, having to pay a low interest rate, and then carry that borrowed money off to a place where they could make 3, 4, 5, or 7% elsewhere. So they would take the difference, the rake off that they got, pay back the loan in Japan, which was next to no interest, and this whole process called the carry trade would just pump up various kinds of bubbles around the world, and this is ready to blow. So I said this was a signal piece because it just means there's suddenly a shower of commentators saying that this isn't going to last forever, that these bubbles can all burst. It can happen sooner in 2006 rather than later. And now we get around to the kind of thing Mr. LaRouche was putting before everyone in the United States and internationally this week. That, look, this bubble-based world economy is an opportunity to purge the system. Let it happen, because Mr. LaRouche and people who think about it know what you can do. You can put things into the kinds of mechanisms that will restore production again. But the question is, are people ready to do that? Are our fellow citizens in the United States, are elected officials ready to face this? That's the kind of thing we have to think about. So pointing that out, that press release from the LaRouche PAC on the bubble being ready to blow, what happened in Iceland, what's being warned of in Japan, have a look at that on the website in the next 24 hours. And secondly, now let me mention to Saba, Jerry, and Aaron, in case they didn't know, they're on the call on the panel here. There is quite an interesting development over the last 24 hours in Washington, where in the Lewis Scooter Libby case, you know, with the counsel Fitzgerald going after him, it's now come about that the White House has suddenly said, golly, we found 250 pages of emails that we hadn't turned over to you from spring 2003. Now, let me just tell you what our understanding is from sources in Washington. In these emails is a lot of back and forth from Dick Cheney personally regarding Dick Cheney being the driver and instigator of going after getting Ambassador Joe Wilson by going after Valerie Plame Wilson, his wife. And so it looks like someone might be making a move against Cheney from, of all places, the White House, which you can see the implications there. It might be Mr. Bush Sr. deciding to see if he can make a move to save Sonny. It might be a lot of things, but definitely it's happened. These 250 pages of emails have been found. And remember, all along, as Mr. LaRouche has been stressing, it would be very unfortunate if we had to face in our country the kind of impeachment process where it was against Bush alone and then you ended up with Cheney, or you had a dual impeachment and you had a mess on your hands. But if Cheney is gone after and he would be set aside very soon, we could always get some psychiatric daycare for President Bush or something, and we have a good prospect before us. So those two things are just by way of updates to the fact that we're now looking at our tasks ahead, and Congress will be coming back into session next week, and the world monetary situation couldn't be more unstable. The economic picture, every day, if you just open your eyes, you see how dire it is in the United States and internationally. Look at the catastrophes. Look at the way we have no preparation for something like a potential avian flu, an H5N1 pandemic. Just look around us. So that's where we come into the fact that we want to talk today about what's involved in creating a groundswell to force the issue that we want positive change out of all of this. And without saying more, let me just turn to the people in Washington, D.C., who were organizing this week, bringing people to hear Mr. LaRouche personally, or otherwise kicking up a fuss on the streets of Washington and at some very interesting events. But either Jerry or Saba, why don't I mention a name first? You can always change. But Jerry, do you want to describe the focus or the purpose of what activities you were carrying out this week in Washington were and how you see what's going to happen next?
Yeah, sure. I guess the focus and the purpose for us being here in this week of action was definitely around the webcast that Mr. LaRouche gave on Wednesday, but also to engage in a number of meetings and discussions with people here in Washington and on Capitol Hill in particular, specifically around some of the aspects of the platform that he's putting together, and as well as some of the recent papers that he's written in terms of economic policy. So that was our outlook in coming in here to Washington, D.C., and our perspective was just to have a lot of fun. There was a lot of activity, but I'll just touch on a few highlights. One of the major interventions that we made this week actually was at the American Enterprise Institute, where you had U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia was a guest speaker there. And just let me say a few words about Scalia. And I'll reference the listeners to the Children of Satan 4 pamphlet that we put out by the LaRouche Political Action Committee. But Justice Scalia is a fascist, and he's a man who does not, who has no regard for the U.S. federal constitution whatsoever, and he's not even a good sophist. But we had a number of youth who were at an event that he was speaking at in which we brought up specific issues of constitutional law, the fact that the presidency is being violated and whatnot, and there was a blatant refusal to address some of the things that we were bringing up by this guy. But we managed to really shake the place up, because the problem was he had a lot of capitulation of this guy's sophistry, which occurs among a lot of these institutional settings where the audience usually does not actually think too much about some of the ambiguities that come up in these discussions, but are somewhat mesmerized by the sophisticated character of the individual. So we managed to counter that and flank it. We really shook the place up. That was one thing. Another thing that might be fun for some of the listeners out there to get a sense of the type of activity that was generated around Washington, D.C. Yesterday, we had a very special celebration. In case people didn't know, there was a shotgun wedding this weekend between Dick Cheney and Satan himself. And some of the things that we had a big day of action yesterday, with about 6 cars all decked out, 1 sound car leading the way with a wedding caravan, Cheney and Satan both in the bridegroom mobile, which was nicely decorated. And And we had a motorcade rally throughout the day around the city, where we got a very good response from the people. It was something that they definitely needed to see, that type of ridicule against the vice president, because sometimes people seem to get frustrated with these guys. But the way the LaRouche Youth Movement has been so effective in dealing with these characters is, one, just to ridicule the guys, but also just have a lot of fun knowing that the work that we're actually doing is indispensable in bringing these guys down. So that was one of the other things that we did yesterday, which was it was really effective.
That's great. So someone got to play Dick Cheney, like Dame Edna or whatever. Is that what you'd had?
In the back seat of the car that had the wedding bells on top of it, that was that had a PA system also on the hood. You had in the back where it said "Just Wed," you had the back seat filled with the two characters, Dick Cheney and Satan herself.
Oh, okay.
It was a bride.
Okay. Oh, that's great. Well, let me ask you, and then you're saying that on Capitol Hill on Wednesday, or one of the days, you actually went around, although Congress is out of session, with some of the aides and the staff members. Is that right?
Right, right.
And do you want to say more about this issue of facing the economic situation? And that was some part of what you were discussing with people?
Yeah, definitely. I just comment on some of the, also refer people who are listening and encourage them to definitely pick up the platform and request for many of their copies of themselves that they can distribute when this thing is published, but also refer back to the recent papers that LaRouche has wrote, namely the capital gains paper, How to Capitalize a Recovery, and What Connects the Dots, because what LaRouche is doing is he's essentially, with his discoveries in physical science and economics, there's no possible way that the currently tolerated doctrines of economic theory can be tolerated among sane individuals. And we encountered the reasons why in the Senate this week. Because we had a number of meetings arranged and to discuss specifically some of the context of these papers. And what we ran into was that, first of all, a lot of the assumptions about what economics is, that the aides and policy staffers in Washington that we had met with this week, a lot of the beliefs they have don't necessarily come with any scientifically provable idea backing it. So a lot of it is based on assumptions and textbook information. And it's largely the way they think has been, has stemmed from the last 30 or so years of policy shaping, which has been degenerate. So we encountered, we kind of knew what we were up against, and we took some specific portions of these papers that LaRouche has been writing, namely on the capital budget and the necessity of a science driver program and some of the details behind it and the way you can measure this in terms of scientific principles. A lot of what we encountered in the discussions was the fact that there's no possible way that under current trends of thinking about the idea of an economy that prevails today among the policy shapers here in Washington is going to be capable of leading, you know, to a reorganization of the economy or some type of economic recovery. Our mission was to bring, with all the work that we're doing, develop a higher quality understanding of the scientific implications of the policies that LaRouche is putting forth, and really challenge some of these guys to work with us in crafting together in crafting what's going to be the policies that are going to be necessary in the coming period to change the economic policy here in the U.S. and also, you know, what type of political fight is involved in that.
Oh, great. And I know, by the way, you're speaking about meeting people in Washington, D.C. this week, and we've passed over, but I just want to also stress those listening by phone or otherwise, you could go on to C-SPAN, c-span.org, and find archived the C-SPAN filming of the Antonin Scalia event that Jerry already spoke of a few minutes ago. And I highly recommend you have a look at that. But back to the content of the meetings you were having on Capitol Hill. Mr. LaRouche has been referring to what he calls programmatic matters, not single issues at all, but key fundamental things like the fact that we have no choice. People can have superstitious feelings about nuclear power, but we have to go nuclear. We should never have quit 30 years ago. We need to have that kind of high-energy technology for dealing with the fact that we're depleting water resources around the world in the way of fossil fresh water, like aquifers or deep water wells. Minerals, likewise. Look at all the reason our coal mines are so deep, many of them, is that we've taken out of the Earth's crust a lot of the handy coal, and to go deeper for it, even with machinery, is a crazy, dangerous thing to do. He didn't say that, I'm just elaborating. But here's what I want to ask all of you, including Aaron on the West Coast, where you're involved in the same kind of dialogue, I'm sure. Was there some aspect of the that is infrastructure or energy or water of the programmatic economic side that you find most that you can use to wake people up with, or you have developed as a way to get them to start thinking again? Let me ask Jerry or Saba again. Does anything come to mind?
Actually, what comes to my mind is the developments that we've had in introducing, you know, more creativity and expanding our work with the Congress and these staffers and other higher-ups, such as legislative directors and chiefs of staff. I find that when you bring up certain particular points that you want to stick to, they find certain grounds on which they want to go tit for tat and try to reject the entire idea.
Okay.
So when we do introduce different ideas, such as, you know, introducing nuclear technology, magnetically levitated trains,
yep,
you get a response from these guys that is kind of like what I call tunnel vision. Ironically, I guess that they're too focused on what LaRouche mentioned as the things rather than the principle.
Uh-huh.
Rather than say when we were to introduce scientific pedagogicals such as doubling the cube, or if we were to introduce something like our music work, which was done over this week, you get a kind of a speechlessness. They kind of get, you know, hit between the eyes, and they don't know quite what to say, and they're in awe. And they see that, you know, not only are they going to have to learn the precedent that, you know, LaRouche has mentioned with Eisenhower and JFK and actually how they happen, but also on top of that, and this is something that even within the best parts of our population, even in the UAW and other places, don't even really have a sense of yet, is that it has to take a step above what's already been done, and that we have to be able to drive this thing with ideas. LaRouche mentioned in the dinner meeting after the webcast with different state representatives and union representatives that you have to be able to go above and beyond what was done before. That if you're going to win this thing, say, for instance, with the congressional races in 2006, you're going to have candidates who are going to run on ideas instead of necessarily appealing to the single issues that people want. And this is what we're confronting with having to instill into the people that we're meeting with right now, because there's kind of a it's like the meeting of two people coming from two totally different worlds.
Uh-huh.
They have to be taught these things from the ground up, from the fundamentals up.
Yeah, I just like to say one comment on just what Salva brought up, and the different responses that we get, and our different approaches here that we've been taking in Washington. I think what we encounter fundamentally is a question of culture, because one thing I noticed that it's LaRouche discusses this in his papers from a scientific standpoint, the difference between a mechanistic approach to politics or science versus a dynamic approach.
Uh-huh.
And I think the general tone of the culture in and around the Capitol Hill area is just very administrative, very, very rigid, and it's very, very linear in the way that people think about politics and how a nation or a government actually functions. So we're taking things like the doubling of the queue, the archivist construction into these meetings, discussing Fermat, Leibniz, and Kepler. It really is a cultural intervention into the institutions as well, to set the type of groundwork for the type of rigor that's necessary to really begin to shape the policy agenda of the next or the immediate period in dealing with some of the things that you described earlier, Marcia, but also in the long term, this 50-year perspective, there's going to have to be a shift in the way that people think about one, the role of government, and the scientific implications of what LaRouche has developed as a physical economy.
Yeah, and I just wanted to mention also that LaRouche also mentioned in the webcast that you're dealing with children of the CCF, the Congress for Cultural Freedom, that you have a couple generations here that don't believe in truth, you know, and so they take that standpoint, you know, also in the politics. They don't think they're quite in a republic, that they're in some kind of a democracy, that they're there to please their local constituents, rather than having a higher mission, a higher obligation. And so when you meet with these guys, it's a real fight to get them to see, and it's a help to get them to see, for instance, the conflict between JFK and the population at large when it came to the issue of having a moon landing mission. That, you know, JFK stood on principle and went against the advice and popular opinion of the entire country to be able to do what was necessary for progress. And this is the type of attitude and disposition that we have to instill into these leaders.
Right. Thanks very much. One thing is, I have a couple of program announcements I'm supposed to make right now, and then something to throw onto the West Coast with Aaron, and also an email. So hold on to that question of forcing a cultural shift in how people think. I'll just say this is the LaRouche Show. It's February 25th, 2006, and we're weekly on the website of Executive Intelligence Review News Service, which is www.larouchepub.com, LaRouchePub.com. I recommend highly you stay in touch either by the website or call in toll-free. If you're inside the United States, I'll give you the following number. It's 1-888, that's toll-free, 1-888-347-3258, 1-888-347-3258. Especially over the next few days, you want to get involved in getting copies as soon as it comes out of this newly written, it was just finished this morning, platform prepared by Mr. LaRouche for this year. For it's very urgent on the leadership required and what are our tasks, what must be done. And the also, I will underscore what Jerry Orsaba said from Washington, D.C. about the importance of this. It's important to have the paper to print it on. So keep in mind contributing the resources. It's literally a question of how many trucks of paper can be bought to circulate this, which I am not exaggerating, can certainly make and change history. So listen March 4th, 2006 from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time in the United States for the LaRouche Show. And we do hope to have at that time Harley Schlanger, our Western State spokesman for Mr. LaRouche, who's busy visiting Washington, D.C. right now. Now, what I wanted to do, given what we've heard from Washington, D.C. and grappling with especially staffers and others on the Hill, Aaron, you're in California. You have, right. I understand, the Sacramento-based, if you have a statewide Democratic Party meeting, I think it might be coming up soon. But you are toe-to-toe on the policy issue with the most populous state in the country. Do you want to add anything to the kind of thing Saba and Jerry were bringing out?
Well, yeah. One of the things that's necessary for us on the West Coast is getting across to the party as a whole the necessity for them to take action immediately, in terms of being historical figures. And it requires a certain kind of emotional quality that a lot of these party members don't necessarily have. And the inspiration to do that takes place largely through demonstrating what the LaRouche-Riemann method is, giving them a sense of history and how they can and should be playing a role in that. So one of the things that we've done through our group work and our intellectual work out here is really focusing on the LaRouche-Riemann method from the standpoint of Vernadsky and looking at also Gauss's work on curvature. We have a huge mapping project that we've been doing out here, which really gets at the nature of these kinds of complex transformations that LaRouche is always talking about. So we're studying this from the standpoint of how to use it effectively and efficiently as a means of mapping out those unseen forces or principles that are directing the economy from an unseen empirical standpoint.
Uh-huh.
And you know, we have the notion of the phase spaces from Vernadsky that really help to illustrate to people what the necessity is for development, how the cognitive processes of the human mind have the ability to improve the overall condition of the biosphere, and how you have a complex interaction of these different phase spaces working together with a sort of a vectorization, a directionality, and that there is an intention of the universe in and of itself that's knowable by the human mind, and that it's our job historically and currently to develop that to a higher level. And we have this... When in L.A., specifically in Southern California, we live in a desert, but it's not a dry desert. It's very green. And taking people through what's necessary to develop the infrastructure and what's going to be necessary, say, for the next coming two generations or more, in order to not just maintain the level of existence that we have right now, but to actually improve it to a much higher level, tends to give our political contacts a higher sense of their own responsibility and their own place in history. So that's been working out pretty well for really being able to communicate some of the ideas that LaRouche has been talking about in terms of inspiring our politicians to take actions in this necessary time.
Oh, that's clear. Let me, we have an email, I'll get to that in a minute. Thank you. But to the emailer, but the one thing is, Aaron, maybe you would say more about how systematically you've developed certain kinds of a curriculum or a course of study or whatever you want to call it. That
right? Yeah.
Go
well,
ahead.
We've been as a group, the entire West Coast and specifically in Los Angeles have been working on Kepler's Mysterium Cosmographicum.
Mm-hmm.
Largely looking at not so much just the actual individual specifics of Kepler's work, but trying to really discover what his method was, because he had a whole series of hypotheses that he put forth that weren't necessarily absolutely right. And yet, going through it, the way that the book is written in this sort of pedagogical format, you actually relive through the construction of the Platonic solids and the reconstruction of Kepler's epistemology, looking at how what would cause a harmonic organization of the solar system as a whole, as opposed to trying to create a more linear kind of elaborate linear look at how the empirical data can be organized into some format of an idea or conception of how the planets are actually moving. Mm-hmm. So instead of looking at it from this empirical standpoint, you're looking at it from a more dynamic and non-mechanistic standpoint. That's one of the things that we've been doing, and going through the constructions and actually reliving those, the ideas that physical space is organized by, and doing the constructions by hand and working through it as a group, has given us a much greater sense as a whole of how to communicate how these various complex processes work. And then also with the mapping project that we've been working on, there's a whole series of different ideas and different elements to any mapping that you might want to do, that with each element that you add increases the overall conception of what it is that the map is trying to explain. Now, the map is never the thing itself, so you have to try to, in order to try and give someone a sense of how they can move through any given space or any given manifold, one has to constantly elaborate the conception from a higher perspective. And that the map work that we've been doing on looking at Gauss's geodesic work and also some of his contemporaries and seeing in how they weigh into that, to the whole picture. And the development of mapping as a whole, from the ancient Greeks up through to Gauss and Riemann, and now what LaRouche's work on curvature, putting that into perspective, again, from the Vernadskian approach, saying to look at the dynamics of the whole system from a higher standpoint and not just being led around by the axiomatic notions of the past, and trying to fit the data, the empirical data, into the same map or the same type of map, creating a totally new form of map.
Well, that's great. Well, in this whole new, getting people into the realm of new conceptualization, or conceptualization as a way of life instead of non-think, let me switch back. Saba and Jerry may want to add to that, but one of you raised the issue of music in addition to constructions and confronting people. Some of the Capitol Hill staffers or others. Did this week you do special music to hit people over the head with and make them think again, or what did you do when you mentioned music?
Yeah, sure. Some of the things that we did this week is throughout the week, a lot of our intellectual work in the evening has been orientated around working through Kepler, his book, The Harmony of the World. And we're looking at book 3, which he goes through harmonics.
Okay.
So one of the projects that we had taken up, a few people before the Week of Action, had built some monochords. And there's a certain section in the book where Kepler is going through the division of a string on a monochord, and he's going through proving the different relationships, the harmonic relationships, and mapping out the musical scale by the division of a string.
Uh-huh.
So we've been working on that, and some of the aspects of the Mysterium Cosmographicum, particularly the division of the sphere, and trying to generate the platonic solids through spherical constructions.
Mm-hmm.
As part of another ongoing project that we got going out here on the East Coast, and we did a little coral work in terms of working on developing the bel canto musical idea of what LaRouche constantly refers to as we worked on some music and had a few choral rehearsals.
Oh, great!
Some of the political canons that we had put up for the week of action were sung different offices in the House and Senate.
Oh.
And then also on the streets. And then we just had two really great classes here at a cadre school where we had this morning with Harley and Bruce Director on going through the music of Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven.
Uh-huh.
So that's what we worked on.
Okay, I wanted people to be able to visualize. Those political canons must have had a good ringing effect, salubrious effect in Capitol Hill. let's continue this, but before the hour goes, let me just throw in a question from one of the emails that's been received, and it was directed to any of the LaRouche Youth Movement panelists today. The topic is, the emailer says, "What gives?" The subject is, if you have a vice president who can't talk any straighter than he can shoot, what gives? Meaning, the emailer says, it's great to hear about all the work you're doing to fight back against sophistry, but frankly, as seen from abroad, looking at the United States from overseas, it appears unbelievable that the American population, along with too many elected officials, would even continue to tolerate at this late stage a character such as Dick Cheney. He calls him Saddam Hussein Cheney. We're getting a little street effects here, but that's okay. But the American population and elected officials are continuing to tolerate Cheney in such a key position as the vice presidency. What do you have to say about why that happens? Does anyone want to volunteer to reply to that?
Well, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, one of it's sort of what I was addressing earlier, in that you have a certain lack of emotional capability to deal with reality,
mm-hmm.
especially amongst the baby boomer and tweener generation. To actually look at the problem and go against the vox populi or popular opinion.
Mm-hmm.
People don't feel like they can assert themselves in any kind of specific direction other than what they feel. And it's a lack of understanding of what's necessary for the survival of this nation state, of this constitutional republic. So it's more of an emotional problem than anything else, I think, that we're dealing with.
Right. Anyone from Washington, D.C. on this?
Yeah, I would say, I'm not sure if the questioner at all is affiliated with our organization or not.
I think it's a close person who listens every week and so forth, yes.
I would just emphasize not to underestimate the role that Lyndon LaRouche is playing here in the United States, because, I mean, that's something critical that has to be understood in terms of leadership, because if it wasn't for the role that LaRouche has played over the past few years, specifically putting out the necessary flanks, which would put, I mean, this breakthrough that you just described earlier the fact that the White House was forced to put out these emails after, you know, after maybe 2 weeks or so of trying to block the issue out. I mean, demonstrates a certain weighing in of the institutions, as LaRouche has demanded that that these guys respond in that way. It's right now we're looking at an institutional fight in the United States, in the Cheney case in particular. But in terms of the population, you know, that gets directly also to the role that this platform is going to play in the coming period, because it's a question of what we do, you know, and what the next 8 months or so is going to mean for the world and the future of the United States is going to be determined on the role of the LaRouche Political Action Committee as the force of leadership in the United States, because the population can be changed, and we're actually seeing that as we organize on the streets every day. We can't actually over the last few years or so, there's been a dramatic change in the attitude of the American population because of the fact that you have a force on the ground that's educating people and agitating people, and also inspiring the necessary ranks of leadership within the political institutions and on the universities to join with us to be a part of an effective movement in history. That's one thing that I would just say. The character of the population is going to be changed by what we do. We necessarily depend on someone who's in an elected position to, finally give in or something, and just say, "Well, I've had enough. I've got to do this," which they should do and they are doing right now. But you can't rely on that moment to occur without playing a certain role of leadership yourself.
Yeah, I think you go right ahead. Was someone else going to add, Saba, or go speak up?
Just really quick. Also, it's very difficult to separate the fight of getting rid of Cheney from the fight against autism. Because you have the fact that these guys are the biggest wannabe sophists ever. with their you know, neocon dribble that they get from their think tanks, it's really a lot of fun exposing this stuff. And when you give, you're doing the science work with contacts and with people that you meet and bring into the functions that the LaRouche Youth Movement holds, and you give people a sense of the power of their mind and the way that they could go behind their sense apparatus to know principles that they could use to change the environment around them, then you add a new, you know, geometry, as we say. You create a greater potential to be able to accomplish that mission, that immediate mission of getting rid of Cheney, but also the higher one.
Yes, and we should remember, this emailer has prompted us, but let's all remember, what was it, how many months ago when Mr. LaRouche had a webcast and put out the printed word that we are in a post-Cheney era. The guy's occupying a position, right? But just what you all have been saying, that the post-Cheney era isn't neat. It's not like he'd tiptoe off the stage of history, right? So it's underway.
Guy wanted to go to war with Iran, over the summer.
That's right. The guns of August, 2005, if he could. And so, I'd like to underscore one thing, and then we have the final 8 minutes or so for people to add things, or we have some more questions from before the show. But this matter that's been stressed several times in the last partial hour by about the importance of this LaRouche platform that's just been finished, that's going to be rushed into editing and printing over the next few days. I can't stress again the quivering of the world bubble, the blowout that's already underway. And I'll just add a few more factoids about how insane it is that you have one of the bubble locations be a place like Iceland up there in the North Atlantic. But just to give you an idea, if you haven't been spending your time on the internet or with your nose buried in the Wall Street Journal or Financial Times, look, just in the last couple years, 2003 to 2005, the stock market in Iceland was pushed up 280% in its stock valuations. Housing prices in greater metropolitan Reykjavik went up over 200%. Hot money would come into Iceland, borrow at a very low interest rate, and for next to zero, then go abroad and make some kind of killing, look for a place to do that, come back, pay it back. And all of this thing was driving up the situation inside the nation of Iceland, so that they were getting more and more, they were importing more, they ran up a big deficit, they ran up a national debt. In turn, their interest rates had to go up and weren't low anymore. They went up to about 10 or 11% until the whole thing blew. A rating agency called Fitch came in this week and said the Iceland bonds, that's government debt, wasn't worth anything anymore. So there was a big classic attempt to dump that, and the terms used was there's a material deterioration in Iceland's debt and government bonds and so forth. And the thing is that this isn't an isolated event. It had effects in South Africa with their Krugerrand, in Turkey with their lira, and in Brazil with their real, and all over the place. And this is only one such instance. There are many other mini-bubbles like this, with the mother of all bubbles partly being based in Japan, which I said is ready to... There are all kinds of commentaries that it's ready to go any time now. So I took an additional minute because it's absurd the way this thing was built up in Iceland, but yet the absurdity characterizes the state of the monetary financial system internationally since in the last 20, 30, 40 years, especially since the Greenspan era when he came into the Federal Reserve in 1987. He's gone now. He's Mr. Bubble, isn't he? So that's the how urgent it is today. Don't underestimate that. So the process of moving ahead and forcing the shift and waking people up to be citizens again that's been described by our LaRouche Youth Movement organizers today, now the time has come. This is the hour. So we have 6 minutes left, and let me ask in general, and then otherwise I'll put to you some of the questions. Do you want to add anything in specific in our remaining time? First from Los Angeles, Aaron.
I just want to say that as far as the organizing at the state convention is concerned, we have...
When is that, by the way?
It's going to be the weekend of April 30th, so the 28th, 29th, and 30th.
Okay.
We have a state that's, as a whole, very much dissatisfied with the current girly man governor that we have. And Schwarzenegger and his puppeteer, George Shultz, are being exposed even amongst the party members. They get a sort of a recognition of what the agenda actually is, what these austerity measures will mean for the future of California. So in light of that, our job is largely just to put forth LaRouche's platform and to demonstrate to them that not only can it be done, but that there's a generation of youth that are fighting for it and essentially giving them the courage to take that stance, to take the stance that LaRouche has put forward to rebuild California and to make it a pilot project for the rest of the nation.
Right. And so already, I mean, as you say, in Southern California or Northern California, anywhere where we are, that must already be underway, right?
Yeah, very much so. The population is just completely fed up, and they're really desperate for ideas. They're very thirsty and hungry for the the ideas that LaRouche has put forward already.
Now, one thing is, let me ask you, and then we can turn again to the East, but Saba or Jerry was talking about the toleration, I guess, in the room where the Chief Justice Scalia was, or the Justice Scalia was speaking, and you see what a poor sophist he was even, but other people would be deferential, especially at the American Enterprise Institute, I suppose. But people were taken in by the celebrity factor, the glitz factor of Schwarzenegger, I suppose, the Hollywood factor in California. Is that dissipated, Aaron?
Well, it certainly lost a lot of its luster. I mean, his approval ratings are very low, and not that that's necessarily important, other than the fact that it's a you get a recognition that the types of attacks that he made on the teachers, on the nurses, on the police and fire department were just the beginning of an intention by the financiers to crush California once and for all, and so. There's a strong backlash within the population to get rid of him, but we're going to have to, within the Democratic Party, develop the kind of leadership that people could actually get behind.
Right.
So that's our task ahead of us right now.
Right. Well, back to Washington, D.C. Do you want to throw something in, or can I ask you a few of these questions that have come in?
I would just like to say one last thing on top of what was said before in reference to the first question, and that is that, you know, LaRouche mentioned this during the webcast, that this guy, Cheney, is nothing. Not to even ask or to focus on the Cheney issue and maybe what his intention is the wrong question. That the big picture is what is controlling Cheney? And what is the greatest threat to that force that's controlling Cheney? And then you get an idea of the ideas that drive the youth movement and what our major mission is.
Right. And you began, or Jerry began earlier, or to begin with this great wedding that you held yesterday, this motorcade of Cheney and marrying Satan, is that right? This shotgun wedding. But how much do you find, you describe the institutions or Capitol Hill staff and so forth, but when it's out there, how much do you find it's very quick that people with humor and so forth, you mentioned people were responsive to this, could you fill it in? That once you had them potentially loosened up, they were able to think again, or you could see there's a spark.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because what it does, what the humor does, is it allows people. It actually activates the mind, individual, to where he or she can come up above these day to day kind of. Common view of their day-to-day life and come up and get a grasp of fresh air for a second. And that sets a type of environment where you can get the person to think about some of the ideas that are being discussed in a more clear-headed way, where that person actually has a moment or two to reflect upon the way that they're thinking about what their outlook and whatever subject matter is being discussed is. So it is probably the most effective strategy that we've been able to use out in organizing the population. Is humor and irony to get the person to think on a higher level and set the groundwork where you can actually work in a very short amount of time to really give the person a sense of citizenship that they have a movement that they can lead with. And that the alternatives are being laid forth by LaRouche. So.
It simply demonstrated that the LaRouche youth movement is the driver of the Democratic Party. He's leading the Democratic Party. So we're doing the gigantic, you know, but yet easy function that the Democratic Party ultimately failed to do in the face of this shooting accident, which is to just tramp all over this guy's face.
Right, say get him out of there. Well, this is the exact spirit on which I'm afraid the time has run out, but the show is ending, namely on the upbeat note that, right, get him out of there. He's history. Get him out of there. And thank you all for being on today. This was February 25th, 2006, The LaRouche Show. And I thank Aaron and Saba and Jerry, and ask everyone to listen again each Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. March 4th will be Harley Schlanger and other guests. And this is Marcia Mary Baker, and I'll be signing off today. We are on www.larouchepub.com. Thank you all very much.
All right, thank you. Please contribute.
Thanks a lot.